In all thy ways, acknowledge him, and he shall make plain thy paths. This is Great Awakenings on globalfreedomtv.com, and we're joined by the great Dr. Stephen Pidgeon once again, who has just returned from a trip. He'll be debriefing us on and jumping into a lot of topics, so let's not waste time in that. Stephen Pidgeon, it is great to have you on as always. There's a lot of things that have been happening, a lot of stories. I wanted to play a video that came out in the last hour or so, in fact, about Hunter Biden, Burisma, its connection to the terrorist strike in Moscow and the Caracas Theater and other terrorist activities. And the resonance of this for you and I and others who know about this, we've been talking about this for a long time. We in fact, I think we were talking about it in 2020 when we went back to Washington in one degree or another. But this revelation of Burisma, Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, being part of this Ukrainian energy holding that was using money for all sorts of black operations against Russia. I think it's very telling, but let me play it real quick and then we can jump into a conversation about it. I don't want to give too much out. There we go. So this is just coming out.
Russian investigators have put the focus firmly on Western officials after accusing them of sponsoring terror acts inside Russia through the Burisma Holdings conglomerate, the Ukrainian firm linked to the US president's son, Hunter Biden. The following is an exchange on that during a White House briefing.
Well, Russian investigators said today they're opening a probe into the financing of terrorism that they say involves Western countries, specifically including funds received by the firm Burisma, by which Hunter Biden was employed. What's your comments on that? Is that just a political ploy, or what, how do you view that?
I mean, it's nonsense. Russia knows that it was ISIS who committed the attack in Moscow. We know it was ISIS who committed the attack in Moscow. We warned Russia of a terrorist attack in Moscow. The rest of this is noise.
In its response to RT about the case, the Pentagon also rejected the allegations outright. However, Russia's investigative committee says the money trail leads to Western actors through the now defunct Ukrainian energy company.
Working in cooperation with other intelligence services and financial intelligence incoming sources and further movement of funds amounting to several million US dollars are being investigated, as well as the involvement of specific individuals from government agencies, public and commercial organizations in Western countries. Additionally, investigative and operational efforts are being made to trace the links of direct perpetrators of terrorist acts to foreign supervisors, organizers, and sponsors.
Given the explosive nature of this accusation, I believe it is very important to listen carefully what the Russian investigative committee had to say. And one thing that stands out to me is that they did not mention the Crocus City Hall attack. They did talk about Burisma being a vehicle for funds and basically that that's how the money would transfer to terrorists or those who attempted acts of terror on the Russian soil. But the very fact that the Burisma company is no more, it was closed just over a year ago in early 2023, it kind of hints that probably Russia's investigators were talking about some other acts of terror. After all, Russian security services, they have been very, very busy since the beginning of Russia's military operation in Ukraine. They have managed to thwart hundreds of terrorist attacks and ploys that were masterminded in Kyiv. And, in some cases, terrorists were successful. There have been a number of high-profile assassinations in Russia that Russia officially blamed Kyiv for. So again, there's plenty of information to work with. And again, it will be really interesting to see exactly if the Russian investigative committee will step forward and explain what exact acts of terror they were referring to.
So Burisma Holdings, I think a lot of people wouldn't know much about this Ukrainian firm if not for its relationship with the Biden family and the involvement the Biden family has had with Burisma over the years. Talk to us about that.
Well, absolutely, because if you're outside of America, then probably you're not very familiar with the name, but if you are inside, and by the way, it is a very partisan matter, but it doesn't matter on which side of the political spectrum you are, but the fact is, if you hear Burisma, you immediately think the Biden family, because the whole scandal was all about the Biden family. And in fact, the Republicans, they were trying to impeach Biden over this. Basically, Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, he was a member of the board at the Burisma company, Burisma being this big, big, big energy giant, and that had a very large share of the Ukrainian energy market. And Hunter Biden, he did not have any credentials that would make him show expertise in the energy market. All he had basically was his father, and so it is largely believed that he was put on the board because of his father, because of his lobbying power. And since there was a corruption scandal and there was a money laundering scandal, and apparently then prosecutor general of Ukraine, he was about to look into this. And the allegation is that the Biden family actually bribed the incumbent authorities to just remove that prosecutor general. Have a listen.
They were being bribed. The fact that Joe Biden gave away $1 billion in U.S. Money in exchange for my dismissal, my firing, isn't that alone a case of corruption?
I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion. I said, you're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here. I think it was, 6 hours. I looked, I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Got fired, and they put in place someone who was solid.
Now, also, this is not where the buck stops. Burisma was part of, it has been embroiled in a number of corruption scandals. Like, for instance, a former Ukrainian MP accused the company, saying that it was involved to a bribe in a bribery scheme that Europe had never seen. Have a listen.
The largest cash bribe in Europe in 2020. $6 million transferred in bags to close the Burisma case. On April 21st, 2022, the Ukrainian court transferred $6 million in cash in agreement with Burisma representatives to the military unit of the main intelligence agency of Ukraine. Here's the part number for this part. This is a secret ruling. No one has seen it yet. After a period of time, Nord Stream exploded. The assassinations of Dugina, Prilepin, Tatarsky occurred. The heads of Ukrainian special services do not hide that they are carrying out political assassination terrorist acts for off-budget cash.
Now, the very way this whole story has been covered, you would struggle to find the name of the CEO in any of the articles, for instance. It's on Wikipedia, of course. It can be easily Googled. But the very fact that everybody focused just on the Biden family, on their involvement, because it is the big thing, and it is what everybody was interested in, whether there was a conflict of interests and whether there were anything criminal where the Biden family might have been involved in. So the connection is very solid. Burisma, you say Burisma, you hear Biden. You hear the Biden family. Again, it doesn't matter if you believe that he did anything wrong, or if you don't believe that, if you believe that there's not enough evidence. It's just the very connection. And now that the Russian investigative committee officially accused Burisma of being involved in a terror scheme, it draws the eyes and it draws the spotlight on the Biden family again.
My colleagues Igor Zhdanov and Rachel Rubel talking us through that. Now, former CIA analyst and host of the Whistleblower Show, John Kerouac, points out Washington's hands aren't exactly clean when it comes to state-sponsored terrorism.
U.S. intelligence agencies develop information about an impending terrorist attack. They're compelled by law to warn the victims in advance that an attack is coming. So that's on the one side. On the other side, I'll recount a story from the day after the Nord Stream attack. I said to a former CIA colleague of mine who's now retired, that had to be us, right? We had to be the ones to blow that up. And he said, well, of course it was us, but we could never say that it was us. So, like I say, the truth is in there somewhere, perhaps in the middle. The ISIS attack or the attack for which ISIS is being blamed, maybe that was to fulfill the duty to warn. Who knows? Nord Stream, I think it's more akin to whistling past the graveyard. You just pretend that everything is fine, nothing is happening, and hope that it just goes away.
A Republican senator says the U.S. has already spent too much on Kyiv.
So there we go, Steve. I don't want to play too much into that, but I think it's pretty telling and kind of depressing at the same time. I'll put it to you on what you think about the Burisma Biden Hunter Biden connection of this terrorist attack and what the Russians have found.
Well, I think what you have going on in Ukraine is it's basically a money laundromat. And the laundromat is more or less steered by Vladimir Zelensky, who, you know, the funds that actually get to Ukraine, which are only some percentage of the funds actually allocated, those funds are, you know, there's big commissions that are paid among the personnel that are surrounding Zelensky to the point that he can buy a $20 million house in Miami, a $10 million house for his mother in Florida, buy another pad for himself in Egypt. And now he just bought the personal residence of King Charles in Britain, the place where Charles raised the boys. Charles just sold it to him for $20 million, right? So I guess Charles must be strapped for cash or something. I don't know. Maybe he can't pay his medical bills. That's another question, right? But the thing is, when you're talking about the operation inside of Ukraine, it's very much a blunt force instrument inside of Ukraine. You had Zeluzhny running the troops there, and that was a one-horse show. Zeluzhny made all the ultimate decisions about what was going to happen on the battlefield. And those decisions, I don't think, were particularly smart. I don't think he was much of a tactician at all. You know, it was run the ball up the middle over and over and over again, no matter how many failures happened. He failed to flank. He failed to see the most important battle of the whole war was Mariupol. He didn't see that. He failed to reinforce. And then he tried to do a counteroffense after the Russians had built a strategic defensive posture. It was absolutely a failed strategy on his part. He was a day late and a dollar short. Now they've got this Russian in there, Sirsky, whose family continues to live in Russia. And Sirsky is, you know, he's basically managing, you know, what's left of the ammunition, right, which ain't much. He's got troops just kind of holding positions so the Russians can't advance without, you know, taking out their position. So it's a huge problem. But you have this one horse pony kind of idea with Zelensky going to his top general, who then barks all the orders to everybody downstream. And so all the money is being focused in that direction. And if it's poor management, then it's poor management. Then they lose the war. So you can see Biden saying, look, can't any of these idiots figure out how to do anything? How come they're not striking Russia in the heartland? We're losing the propaganda battle. You know, the only thing that we see coming out of Ukraine is Ukrainian losses, Ukrainian losses, Ukrainian losses. And so there's two camps. One camp is British intelligence, which has been intent upon striking Crimea. And so it's British intelligence and Storm Shadow cruise missiles that have done the huge damage to Russia in Crimea. Much of which is launched out of Romania, and it's under direct British supervision, and the Russians know it. So they have, you know, they've sunk, for instance, when they sunk the Moscow, the prize ship in the Black Sea, they destroyed one of the submarines in dry dock. They struck the Kerch Bridge twice, and they've done some other miscellaneous bombing in the Crimea that was pretty heavy, and did it take a toll on Russian assets in the region? That was done by British intelligence. But all the stuff that's inside Russia, like the assassination of Maria Dugin and the assassination in St. Petersburg, the strikes in Voronezh, the strikes in Belgorod, the strikes in Kursk, all of those are being engineered somewhere else. It's by a different intelligence apparatus. It's a different structure outside of the scope of Zeluzhny and Zelensky. In other words, they're not the ones making the decision to launch these attacks. Now, Jake Sullivan to say, oh, that was ISIS. Everybody knows it was ISIS. Scott, what do we know about ISIS? Who funded him? Who created him? Right? If you want to point to ISIS and say it was some independent terrorist group named ISIS, you're not getting past me. I know that ISIS was created by the Israeli intelligence and the CIA. John McCain was right there in the middle of it, and then direct funding, direct supervision. And it was at all material times, it was an agent of U.S. intelligence operating in the field in Iraq and Syria, southern Turkey, etc. at all material times. We supported them using U.S. Air Force assets in strikes against Syrian troops. So, and you saw all the bank accounts. You know who funded them. You saw the bank accounts yourself. So under these circumstances, trying to point the finger at ISIS, Jake, I hate to break the news to you, buddy. It still points the finger right back at you. And it still points the finger right back at U.S.-sponsored, state-sponsored terrorism. However, this could be a different instrument. This could be a different instrument that's being used. Because when we're talking about Burisma being linked to this, now you have to remember in Ukraine, Ukraine is really marked by hyper-loyalties, or it used to be, hyper-loyalties to specific oligarchs. So, for instance, Right Sectors, Svobodna, these kind of organizations, and Burisma was one, Burisma being an energy conglomerate in Ukraine, whose primary responsibility was to manage Russian natural gas coming through Ukraine. Right? And so this organization, this group, which Hunter Biden was involved, you know, this is an oligarch. So that oligarch commands a particular team of comrades, if you will, Tavarishim, who are operating on behalf of his interests. There were other organizations, other well-placed oligarchs that were, for instance, very influential before the criminalization of the Russian-speaking people in Ukraine. And, you know, pretty significant oligarchs running pretty significant political parties in Ukraine, wielding a great deal of minority power. Those have since been completely destroyed by Poroshenko, who destroyed them all, criminalizing them, making them illegal, criminalizing the Russian language, and embarking on a course of genocide in the Donbass. So here you have these. So if you know Ukraine, you know anything about this, you know that you have these independent oligarchs that are still functioning outside the scope of this one-horse pony called Zelensky. So when Biden wants to make a strike inside of the U.S., or inside of the U.S., excuse me, inside of Russia, he's looking into, and he's thinking, okay, look, we have to have a propaganda victory somewhere, some way that we can distract the BBC, that we can distract the Daily Mail in the U.K., that we can have some story to tell in New York among the, you know, the propagandists that exist in the media there. And those stories have to be some success inside of Russia. Oh, Russia's losing the war. Well, how do you know? Oh, we bombed Belgorod. Oh, we bombed Kursk. Oh, they were struck hard inside, you know, Ukraine is striking deep inside Russia and doing damage, right? And of course, assassinating Maria Dugin was just an absolutely horrendous crime. I think it was one of the worst things you could think of. And this mindset, by the way, is exactly what you see coming out of the atheist Talmudic leadership. Killed their wives and children. That's the first thing that comes to mind in their mind. Oh, we're at war with somebody. Let's don't go onto the battlefield and do war. Let's kill their wives and children behind the lines, right? Because it's filthy and disgusting, and they're immoral and amoral, and they're dogs, they're pigs. So this kind of mindset, well, let's go kill the daughter of the great philosopher, the great Russian intellectual leader. Let's kill his daughter in the field. That'll hurt him. That'll really hurt him. And if you recall, there was even a statement made, I think it was made in the Daily Mail. Oh, Putin's mistress and her children are in Switzerland. Let's kill them. First thing that comes out of their mouth, right? Let's kill the wives and children of these guys instead of fighting a battle like a man. And the reason they don't do it is because they're not men. They're all neutered, you know, geldings running around in their unicized life and dictating the world from their power base of arrogance because they don't have any children. And they're never going to have any children. So with this being said, did Burisma, you know, the intelligence seems to link Burisma to the intelligence operations that are being used to exact terrorism inside Russia. Now, is that state-sponsored terrorism, or is that at the commands of some Ukrainian oligarch who's telling Biden, I can run this country better than Zelensky, watch, I'll get some real hits, or something like this? I mean, I don't know. I can tell you that to say, well, look, Burisma did it, therefore the Biden family did it. I don't think there is a sufficient link and causation right there to be able to point the finger directly at that, especially since Hunter Biden was there just to peddle influence from Joe Biden illegally in violation of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act and the Logan Act. But don't let that stop Biden. Biden is openly corrupt and admitted it right on the video clip you just showed. He withheld $1 billion until the prosecutor investigating his son was fired. That's quid pro quo. That's exactly what Trump was impeached for. And here Biden is doing it. So Anyway, he's a crook. There's no question. Everybody knows he's a crook. The question is he a sponsor of terrorism? Well, when you look at the events that took place there at the City Hall, called the Crocus City Hall, that event was planned for at least 2 months. And it was well-funded, well-advertised. You know, they advertised it in Kyrgyzstan. They attracted these guys using the methodology that Ukraine was using. They brought them into Turkey. They rehearsed the strike for 2 months in Turkey. And then they entered using auspices that were highly financed. And they had an escape route that was also highly financed. And they executed with absolute ruthlessness. I mean, the videos prove that. They executed with ruthlessness. And they're going to be executed ruthlessly. It wouldn't surprise me if they don't get beheaded in Russia. That would not surprise me at all. Mm-hmm. Okay. But the issue here is in terms of state-funded terrorism. Now, the whole idea of the Nord Stream pipeline being blown up was an act of war, not only against Russia, but also an act of war against Germany. Germany doesn't want to admit it. None of the people in the EU want to admit that the United States has been engaging in war against Western Europe. And the war that the United States is using against Western Europe is to deindustrialize Western Europe, in particular to deindustrialize Germany, to force German entrepreneurs to repatriate into this Democrat dictatorship we've got going on here in the U.S. It's a failed policy. It's not going to work. You know, this is how Democrats think. We'll punch them in the face until they do what we want. Republicans say, let's create tax incentives. Let's create this. Let's create loopholes. Let's do that. Let's open the doors. And then we'll invite them in. They'll see it's a great place to be. Democrats, punch them in the face until they come here, right? This is how stupid. This is why the Democrats favored slavery the whole time the United States was formed. The Democrats were the ones that demanded slavery be retained in the Constitution. The Democrats were the ones that fought the Civil War. The Democrats were the ones that created segregation. The Democrats were the ones that were resistant to the 1964 Civil Rights Act, unanimously voting against the Civil Rights Act. Huh? You know, you think Joe Biden isn't a plantation runner? You know, if you ain't black, you're not voting for Biden. You know, I mean, get out of here. You know, that racist dog is trying to claim that he's somehow the champion of the rights of black Americans. Not even close at all. He's a bigot. The Democrats, you know, they had the head poobah for the KKK sitting in the Senate, Senator Robert Byrd, for 50 years, for heaven's sakes. Yep. And the black community is going to swallow this pill? You don't need to be run by that. Anyway, so we talk about state-sponsored terrorism. When we look at the kinds of things that the State Department has done, come on, let's talk about what took place in Tunisia. Let's talk about what took place in Syria. There was no active war with Bashar al-Assad, but somebody was shooting chlorine bottles at Syrian civilians, sponsored with U.S. money. All of the acts of ISIS were acts of terrorism that were funded, sponsored, and created by the United States government. You think those aren't acts of terrorism in Gaza that killed those 7 aid workers? On the claim that, oh, we thought there was a Hamas terrorist inside the Jeep? No, they didn't. They killed those aid workers because they were feeding women and children that they want dead.
Yes.
Now, the whole world knows those were radical acts of terrorism, state-sponsored terrorism. And when you're using U.S. munitions, including cluster bombs, to bomb civilian targets in Donbass, those are acts of terrorism. That state-sponsored terrorism. And what cluster bombs did you use? Is Kiev manufacturing cluster bombs? Are they? No, they're not. Those cluster bombs came from somewhere. They got a signature on them. And it's U.S. armament that's being used to bomb civilians. And when you specifically target civilian deaths, those are acts of terrorism. So the question is, where can you link this money? Now, if the money goes back to Burisma, then the next, and you know, I think what's the surprising thing about this, Scott, is that, you know, when I grew up studying political science as a young man, we were making comparisons between the American intelligence apparatus, the British intelligence apparatus, which was MI6, and the Russian intelligence apparatus. And the question was, who had the better intelligence? Now, we can see right now that the Russians have a very experienced program in intelligence gathering.
Yes.
I mean, here, you know, like where if the U.S. gets a suspect in custody, gee, well, he demanded his Miranda rights and is lawyered up. That's the end of the discussion. The Russians, the guy's missing an ear and told us the whole story.
Yes.
Right? I mean, that's what went down. And they had the whole story in short order. In
Yes.
24 hours, they had the whole story from all four of those guys. And there wasn't any question about whether or not they were going to tell the whole story. They
Yep.
were going to tell 100% of the whole story, and they were going to do it in 24 hours.
Yep.
And so the Russian intelligence apparatus is much more sophisticated than what the US intelligence apparatus anticipates. They think they can bury a story. They think that if they bury a story sufficient that some CNN reporter who is an untrained ignoramus with a 0.5 IQ can't find, oh, we've covered that right up. We told them it's the rest of this is noise, and they all believed it and went home. Well, I'm sorry, the Russian intelligence agencies did not all believe it and go home. They instead looked for further answers, and they're
Let
finding those further answers.
me play a quick video that talks to your point that just came out. RT Nikki, whatever her name is, did it, and it was looking at these terrorists and what they were actually saying. And you can hear with your own ears what they were admitting to, albeit with chunks of their ear missing.
Ukrainian intelligence services are connected to the terrorists who carried out the Moscow concert hall attack last month. That's one finding of the Russian Investigative Committee.
At the moment, 11 people involved in a particularly serious crime have been identified in the case. All of them have been charged and preventively detained. The investigation has already obtained significant information about the circumstances of the terrorist preparations for the crime, which may indicate their connection with the Ukrainian special services.
After carrying out the attack on Moscow's Crocus City Hall, the four suspected terrorists headed towards the Ukrainian border. They were detained in the Bryansk region, around 100 kilometers away from their destination. The Russian president later announced that there was an escape opening prepared on the Ukrainian side. Barely speaking a word of Russian when detained, the suspects later confirmed this was the case, explaining in passable Russian.
What were your group's plans after the terrorist attacks?
To
move towards Kiev.
We wanted to leave the territory of Russia. We got in the car and hit the road.
I realized that it would be difficult to cross the border. Saifulov said that there would be guys waiting for us at the border with Ukraine who would help us cross it and get to Kiev. Saifulov told us to drive towards Ukraine. At the border, we had to make a phone call to get help to cross the border.
This footage is being published for the first time. Suspects in the Crocus City Hall terrorist attack outside Moscow, who had claimed they couldn't communicate without a translator, now seem eager to talk. On camera, a confession, a motive, a plan, as they spill out the details of their failed getaway plan, which was meant to lead them to the Ukrainian capital. Saifulov told us to drive towards Kiev, and when we get to the border, not far from the border, to abandon the car and call him. He will help us. Saifulov said, when you get to the border, call me, and I will tell you what to do next.
We'll have plenty more details on this story and everything else. Don't forget.
So there we have the kind of what we know so far about the guys going back to Ukraine. They don't look like the brightest bulbs. I wouldn't be surprised if they were going to be killed. I wouldn't be surprised if Mossad recruited them out of Tajikistan. The Mossad are always good at that because they look like these brown, hook-nosed, black-haired devils. And of course, the Mossad are far worse in their bloodthirsty behavior. But Stephen, I'll hand it to you just to kind of close this out on Ukraine, because I definitely think, with regarding to the intelligence apparatus and the legal prosecution, that's the one thing Russia does excel. It has inherited its Soviet Union, KGB, whatever you want to call it, its decades of skilled intelligence, psychological warfare, interrogation, whatever you want to call it. It's inherited those libraries of lessons and skills, and it's got those on the shelf. And although it is a Christian Orthodox moral country now, It will use these tools where appropriate to protect its people. And as it delves into the investigations you were saying earlier, they are going to scrutinize every grain of sand and parse it and divide it and find out where that grain came from, what rock that grain came from, and where is that rock located, and how did that rock fall off, and who chipped that rock off. They are beyond imagination in their exhaustive capability of really getting as low as they possibly can, where the U.S. doesn't have the emotional intelligence or the maturity, and especially now with this COVID-19 vaccine. I think we're always neglecting the fact that that is having, to everybody who got it, a mental retarding effect that Russia hasn't had. They aren't on board of Klaus Schwab or Big Pharma or any of the big companies that were in Ukraine that were developing all of this COVID-related stuff. That's another shoe to drop. So Russia, I think, is going to be presenting this evidence on all of these subjects at the United Nations through Nebezia. And it's going, at the end of the day, I look forward to hearing and seeing, just to prove our conversation right. But I look forward to hearing Nebezia say, "All right, ladies and gentlemen of the United Nations, here's what we have. Here is a whole briefing and an argument that's going to be made to the International Court of Justice, the International Criminal Court, the United Nations." And it essentially says the United States planned and orchestrated the attack and the destruction of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. And here's the evidence. Here's the testimony. Here's the bank accounts. Here's the satellite reconnaissance photos. Here's the admissions of everybody that's been on there. So here's Nord Stream. And it's directly connected to Joe Biden and the rest of it. It's a state act of terrorism. And then you've got the Crocus Theater murder and these morons that did it. And then you've got all the biochemical labs that were in Ukraine and this connection to the COVID-19 sickness they try to spread throughout the world. Russia knows truth is always going to float it to the top of nations. You ask, who has the better apparatus, the British, the Americans, or the Russians? I would say hands down now, Russia, without any doubt,
Yeah, I
because they
agree.
deal in truth, because they know it always wins. Truth can never be defeated. And in this day and age, all the nations of the world are thirsting and following nations that use truth. And Russia does. It doesn't use lies. That's all the United States uses is lies and dissimulation and obfuscation and shell games and musical chairs and like Kirby and theatrics of language. No, nobody, that smells like, horse manure. Nobody wants to get near that. But Russia is different. So, and I'm not tooting their horn. I'm just saying their analytical capability is unmatched and their dedication to the truth is spiritual. It's religious, where the United States has a current regime, has a hatred of truth, a hatred of nature, a hatred of family, a hatred of marriage, a hatred of little boys being little boys and little girls being little girls and growing up to like each other. No, they want to make women lesbian, bull dyke, masculine, knuckle dragon, monkeys, and men effeminate, squeaky voiced, castrated eunuchs, and call that a family, call that a normalcy, call that human rights. So I'll end it there and just say I think Russia wins hands down. And the last hand of this poker game is yet to be played. But when it gets put down, Russia's going to take the whole pot.
Yeah, that's very likely. I think, what's happening now, one of the successes I believe we've had, there's a couple of successes I believe we've had. One is that Russia is now trying in criminal trials the leadership of Ukraine for crimes against humanity. Now, this is, I think, a very good idea because, each strike that takes place in Lugansk or in Donetsk or in Mariupol or wherever they may be striking, somebody, and it was Zaluzhny, I believe, that was giving the orders. Strike. And then they were using American HIMARS and other devices to strike, target and strike residential buildings, daycare centers, churches, libraries, etc., when they knew people would be there. These were intentional acts that were intentionally targeted. And Russia is taking the perspective now is we're going to try the guy who pulled the trigger on that HIMAR, the guy that went fire and did it, he's going to get tried for crimes against humanity. And we're going to indict him and we're going to convict him in a Russian court. In fact, they're going out of their way right now to try to give these people notice. We know who you were. We know what you did. And we know who your commander was and who gave the order. And ultimately, it goes back to Zelensky and back to Zelensky. And all of these guys are in the direct chain. And that's why I say it's a one horse pony. It goes right back to the top. They're going to be able to point it right to the top and say, this was a crime against humanity. This one strike. And guess what? You guys did 330 of these in 1 year. That's 330 offenses. And it's all coming back to each one of you, right? Try them on an individual basis. You only need to convict on one. And if Russia does what Dima Medvedev is talking about doing, which is to cast back into the death penalty, which the only reason Russia avoided it is because it sought to be a participant with the EU. But the EU has given the cold shoulder, snubbed their nose at him. So Russia has said, okay, fine. Well, we're going to go back to being Russia, which means the death penalty is going to return. And when the death penalty returns, when this war is over and there's acquiescence by Ukraine, you have state acquiescence, state comes in and says, okay, we're going to end this thing. And, you know, right now, I mean, you know, the Kiev could not be weaker. The way it stands right now, 90% of the power supply in Ukraine has been completely destroyed. They've got nothing. They've got no power in most of the cities. And this, they're lucky that Russia waited until the spring to do it instead of doing it in January. Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so Russia is prepared now to continue to bombard until they're going to be a completely powerless back in the Stone Age nation. They've got no ammunition. They're scrounging through the swamps to find unused Russian shells that they can use to fire back at the Russians. They've got children out on the lines. They've got old men out on the lines. They can't recruit people.
Mentally retarded out there on the lines, too.
I mean, it's just, it's absurd. Now, the U.S. is saying, Biden, in his brilliance, well, let's just recruit all the drug cartel guys that are in prison in Mexico and Venezuela and Cuba and stuff, and then we'll put them into a PCM, you know, a professional mercenary organization, and we'll put them into Ukraine, and they can fight. Oh, yeah, okay, you know, yeah, good thing you thought of that, Joe, at this point in the stage.
You know, let me pick up on that real quick, and I don't know if I talked to you about this idea before you left for Britain, and I want to leave some room so you can bring in the British crisis that's going on, but did I raise with you and share the idea of Ukrainians manning the southern border in the United
States?
Yes,
you did. You did share that idea. And, you know, I mean,
let me just revisit that real quick, because when you just said this, the American POW or cartel, right? Biden picking up cartel guys in jail. I was thinking, did he steal another one of my ideas? Because I said, you know, I was back in Ukraine. I was back in Russia interrogating Ukrainian soldiers, officers. I met a lot of people. They're not all bad. They're not all Nazis. There are a couple, but there are a lot of guys that didn't want to be there when it had to go in, got, you know, butt caught in their tank and it got charged for blowing up a building, you know, but they had to, or else they would have got shot by the commander, whatever the argument is. But these guys that I and there's a lot of them, are salvageable. And I'm not a bleeding heart. You know that, Stephen. I am not I don't want to hurt anybody. No, I'd say kill them all if they're bad. But for those that are salvageable, like The Dirty Dozen was a film where you went into prison and you took out the highest skilled, nothing, you know, they've got nothing to lose, you know, nowhere to turn to except forward. Otherwise, they're going to get killed. The Dirty Dozen took these guys, deployed them on a mission, and things went squirrely, but they accomplished the mission, but these guys were effective. And I saw the southern border is this issue. The only way to stop this invasion, and this is an invasion by third worlders that's only going to increase because they're all getting a sense, well, if my neighbor can go up there and not come back, then I'll do it too. So I would presume over the next 6 months, you're going to have double the invasions. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think it's going to double. I think you're going to have every third world person that can walk, and even those who can't, being shuttled up here by the Jewish Israeli Zionists, by the Catholic charities and the Mormon charities and all this other stuff. They're going to be flooding up here, and you've got decent ones, but then you have some real bad knuckle dragon drug addict, you know, scum that are just looking to come in, steal houses, squat, rape, pillage, and take as much as they can, as if they're going into a casino or going into a Target store, right? So there, unless you have real manly men on the border with, you know, orders to use all means necessary to repel, you know, microwave weapons, non-lethal weapons are fine. I also said we need to set the Texas border should have been set up as a firing range after the Mexican-American War. And they should have said the entire Texas border is a firing range. So we go 10 miles in. So nothing crosses there. If they do it now, that would stop a lot of the influx. And the Ukrainians, you don't have Americans who are going to step up and do it because they're stupid, cowardly, out of shape, or afraid, then you've got to have someone to do it. And who's the best army? Who are the best trained that are really no longer an army? They're like mercenaries. They're not even mercenaries. They're not cohesive anymore. They're a bunch of individuals thrown in jail, afraid that the Ukrainians are going to drop missiles on their jails like the Ukrainians have done in the past and killed their own soldiers to stop them from talking.
They shut down an aircraft full of Ukrainian troops that were going to be traded for Russian troops. Shot it down.
Yes. So that was the idea. Is if, let's say, if Trump or someone said, go do it, Bennett, I would go back to Russia. I would take out all the guys that could be salvageable from their jails and stuff, bring them over, put them on the border, give them, you could transfer them out of the custody of the prison into the Department of the Attorney General of Texas. So they're still in prison, right? They're just on parole. They're on based, you know, confinement or whatever, ankle bracelets, whatever you call it. Your mission for the next year is to protect this border, and nothing and no one gets through. I don't think anybody could do it with the same pizzazz, shall we say, ruthless, merciless, lethal pizzazz than the Ukrainians. And isn't that exactly the only thing that's going to repel rabid dogs is the fear of death? Now, if we're too weak and cowardly to do that, well, welcome to the fall of Rome. It's going to happen tomorrow. But that's the only way that I could see saving the border is putting a fighting regiment on there and to even do kinetic operations deep in country. But I just wanted to raise that. That seems to be because when Joe Biden's saying he's going to put the cartel people in there, the Russians would simply say, your cartel, come with us. We'll get you a new uniform. Here's $1 million. And your job now is to go into California, go into Florida, go in somewhere else and wreak havoc on the United States. Who is the cartel most likely going to wreak havoc on? Russia or the United States, where they've been, you know, they've got the mestizo, Mexican, Hispanic, Indian bloodlust.
Yeah, you know that the whole Southwest is an easy place for cartel members to get lost.
Yeah,
very easily. They're going to stick out like a sore thumb out there in Kharkov, you know. But, you know, what's interesting, though, I mean, it's an interesting idea, Scott. I mean, you know, I know that when we talk about some of the ideas on this program, for instance, when I mentioned to you that there's no possible way I could ever support any global warming initiative at all until they stop the chemtrails and stop the use of HARP. After we said that, 12 states have enacted measures to prohibit chemtrails in their various states, right? Okay, well, if you're serious about it, get with it. You know, let's have all 50 states put this into motion, because we know that the United States Air Force is acting rogue against American interests, poisoning the American skies, using directed energy weapons against American targets. Who is this that's doing this, right? It's not the UN. It's coming out of specific branches of the United States military. Our tax dollars at work are paying our government to do nothing except plan on how to kill us, whether it's done by a fake disease or the cure for the fake disease, whether it's done by directed energy weapons, whether it's done by starvation and eliminating the food supply in the country, whether it's done by tanking the dollar, whatever it takes to kill America, our government is willing to do, and it has it underway. And goes to bed tonight thinking about how can we do it better tomorrow morning. So under these circumstances, I mean, what I would say now, Scott, I want to kind of cut to this, if you don't mind. I'd like to cut to this issue of what happened in Britain. And I want to talk about this because this is really kind of paramount as to what's going to happen in all of the Western world now. We have arrived at really a climax point, and it's a climax point that is, you can see the leadership of Russia in this respect. Russia has moved into a theocracy, and a constitutional theocracy. That's what they've done. Now, they have a different model than does a Britain. But nonetheless, they're a constitutional theocracy. Now, today was the last day of Ramadan. There were substantial celebrations in Russia for the Muslim community in Russia, which is a significant community. Almost 30% of the population is Muslim. And so Putin congratulated the Muslims as being meaningful Russians and doing their thing. That is something that could not happen in Britain. Even though we've got, there's a huge Muslim population in Britain right now. You have a Muslim mayor in London. You have a Muslim prime minister in Scotland. You have an Indian prime minister in England. You know, I mean, it's kind of conspicuous, right? That London is now brown. It's no longer white. So, but if the, the funny thing is, Scotland is now enacting the World Economic Forum's protocols for extinction, protocols for genocide in Scotland, where, for instance, if you happen to own a chicken in Scotland and you haven't registered, you can go to prison for 5 years to pay a £5,000 fine. Well, this pinhead that's running Scotland had a legislation passed that's similar to the same legislation that World Economic Forum, sycophant, pseudo-tyrant, illegitimate child of Fidel Castro, Justin Castro, and his neo-Nazi leadership, Chrystia Freeland, in Toronto, have enacted bills that, you know, hate speech bills that put people in prison for doing things like reading the Bible. You can go to prison for reading the Bible in public. You can go to prison for even mentioning the Bible in public. Well, this pinhead in Scotland came up with the same bill that, by the way, was passed in the state of Washington. Same group of blockheads, right? These are people that have diseased minds. They're suffering from crotch rot of the brain, okay? I mean, that's basically what it comes down to.
Liked how you said last time, and I used it. I give full credit to Stephen Pigeon. Mental syphilis. They're suffering from mental syphilis. That's brilliant.
I mean, that's really what it is. They've got mental syphilis, you know. So this fool comes out and says, okay, any hate speech is subject to criminal prosecution and we'll pay you a stipend to report it. So he passed a bill. There were 4,000 complaints in the first day against him for his anti-white tirade that he published on Scottish television. 4,000 complaints against him. Hey, eat it, buddy. Eat it. Eat your own words. You didn't think that you were the racist dog that you were talking about in your own bill? Eat it. Eat it. Okay. But with that being said, so Scotland has got a bunch of sick people down there. You know, I was down there, you know, in Edinburgh, right? If you go down the Royal Mile, right? Come down from Edinburgh Castle and you go down to Holyrood. Right across from Holyrood is the Scottish Parliament. And the very first sense I got of the Scottish Parliament when I stood there is that these people don't know who they are. I mean, they had the EU flag up. Hey, what are you talking about? You guys left. Remember Brexit? They had the EU flag flying. They had the Scottish St. Andrew flag flying. They had everything but the Union Jack flying. I was like, okay, so you guys really, you know, they had the, you know, the LGBT flag flying. You guys don't know who you are, do you? You're sitting here completely confused. You don't know who you are. There's no Scottish identity left. And, you know, when they try to tell you, the image of Edinburgh was this guy playing the bagpipes, you know, right, in the big Scottish hat, wearing the kilt, you know, playing Loch Lomond or something. But the truth is it, you know, the true image of Edinburgh was some meth head hanging off a street lamp, right? You know, I mean, it's a welfare capital, right? As is Liverpool. I was just in Liverpool, right? Get this. In Liverpool, you get a welfare stipend if you're obese. And you get a welfare stipend if your child has been diagnosed with ADHD. So there's 83,000 children in Liverpool that have got ADHD, and everybody is morbidly obese, running around getting a check, stuffing their face with potato chips.
Wow.
Right? I mean, this is what's happened to Liverpool, right? It's absolutely horrendous. Okay. So in the meantime, something has happened in Britain that is really critical, which is that you have a monarchical crisis going on in Britain right now. That's what's happening. There's a monarchical crisis. Now, I can tell you, I mean, I'm really deep into this stuff, Scott, deep into it. And you know, the situation with Charles is that he's got pancreatic cancer. He's had it for about 8 months. His hands are swolled up to the size of a Cuban cigar, each finger. And this has been the case since before he disappeared. I mean, he's in really bad shape. They've said he's got 2 years to live. The NHS cannot keep him alive for 2 years. It's not going to happen. They've already scheduled his funeral and already made the funeral arrangements, right? All of this is done. So Charles is looking at, okay, the succession. Now, if you recall, Charles had a problem when he took the throne. He had to take an oath to be the defender of the faith, because the fundamental responsibility of the king in Britain is to be a defender of the Anglican Protestant faith. That's his fundamental responsibility. And this is central to the crown. And because England, the United Kingdom, is a theocracy. And unlike Russia, that is a theocracy that is Orthodox dominant, but is, you know, Muslim tolerant, the theocracy in Britain is not tolerant. It is particularly intolerant of Roman Catholicism. It is intolerant of the EU. It is intolerant of the Fourth Reich, that is now the EU. It is intolerant of the Holy Roman Empire in its Reich uniform. And this has always been the case since 1534 in Henry VIII's edict, intolerant to Rome. Now, this is one of really the beauty of the English-speaking world, and this is the quality that I want to talk to. The English-speaking world has a magical tool, if you will. It's got a supernatural device called the common law. The common law is a supernatural device that is capable of writing the English-speaking world. And the common law says that, first of all, a common law is common when it exists from time immemorial. That is to say, there is no contradiction in its existence, and you can't point to when it actually began. It was sprung out of time, out of mind, has been the tradition of its practice. Second thing is, it was adopted by consent of the people. Third is, it's not irrational. It's a reasonable law in its construction. It does not have absurdities or impossibilities associated with its enactment. So these are the three premises, the triadic formula of the common law. Now, if you want to immigrate into Britain, immigrate into Britain. But don't come in here with Sharia. The only law that can stand in Britain is a law that is here at the consent of the common law. No law stands in the English-speaking world but by the consent of the common law. That includes laws ecclesiastical out of Rome. That includes laws ecclesiastical out of the Quran and the Sharia. That includes ecclesiastical laws out of the Talmud. None of those laws have any validity in Britain, save that they are permitted to be there under the common law of Britain. Okay, that's premise number one. Premise number two is the defense of the faith. Now, you've got a problem because William is an atheist and has said point blank, I will not take an oath to defend that faith. Point blank. Now, Harry, on the other hand, has said, I'm an atheist, but he has not denounced whether or not he's going to take the oath. Now, from my point of view, Harry is going to be the one that's going to end up as the king, not William. When William abdicates, his son George will lose the right to ascend to the throne. And it's very interesting because when you look at the line that is there with Charles does not really have, he's not in the line of kings of David, okay? They're Coburg Geta. And they were derivative. Elizabeth, if you recall, George the Sixth was not supposed to be the king.
That's
Edward
correct.
the Sixth was supposed to be the king. He abdicated because he was a Nazi, and they knew it. And Churchill forced him out. He said, "You can't come in here. We're not going to have a swastika hanging on Buckingham Palace." But once again, the rejection of the Reich, the rejection of the Holy Roman Empire, of claiming the sovereignty of Britain. Okay. So George the Sixth takes the throne, and when he and as a result, Elizabeth is Coburg Geta, and she does not have a direct tie to the lineage of the House of David. Okay? There is a specific lineage that comes both out of the Welsh kings and out of the Irish kings through the Scottish kings that tie the House of David through the line of Sirach all the way to the lineage of the king. And Charles does not have it. This is why I believe it was Philip that picked out Diana Spencer, but it might have been Elizabeth, but they picked her because she had the genetic line of David in her family, which means that either William or Harry, unlike Charles, have a legitimate claim to the throne of Britain in the long line that goes all the way back to the twin children of Judah. It goes that far back. And this is an important, if you don't mind for just a second, Scott. Okay, so on the theology, you know, under the Torah, the primogenitor, the firstborn, is the one who receives the benefit of whatever rights and privileges are going to be granted. And so there is a passage in Genesis says that Judah will have the scepter in his hand and a lawgiver between his feet. Well, Judah himself was a dog, okay? He was a dog. He married a Canaanite woman when she was 9 or 10 years old, had three Canaanite sons, embarrassed his family, embarrassed everybody else, and, you know, Yah killed all three of those, two of the three of those sons. But he brought in a Hebrew girl, Tamar, to be the wife, and she, you know, none of the boys would touch her. So he decides to go up to the sheep shearer's place, and he's trying to pick up prostitutes. I mean, this is who Judah was. Yeah, you know, let's go to Vegas for the weekend, right? And he goes up there and he runs into this prostitute. Well, it's Tamar disguising herself. She gets pregnant with twins and says, he says, well, you need to burn. You're pregnant. He says, well, let me show you who got me pregnant. Here's his staff, his cloak, and his ring. It was you. Okay. So then the birth takes place, right? Zerach is born. The hand comes out. A red ribbon is put around his hand. The hand withdraws. And then Peretz is born. And his name Peretz means the breach be upon you. Well, David comes from the house of Peretz. Solomon comes from the house of Peretz. And ultimately, Mashiach himself comes from the house of Peretz. Well, what happened to Zerach? The red ribbon was the mark of the goat that was cast into the wilderness. And Zerach was cast into the wilderness. Well, the house of Zerach ends up in Ireland, ends up in Scotland, ends up in Wales. This is the house of Zerach. And they have a line of kings that is developed during this whole period of time. Okay, into this house comes Jeremiah and Tiatefi in 581 BC. She marries the high Irish king. That line continues through Robert the Bruce in Scotland. Into this very same situation comes Joseph of Arimathea with his daughter Mary, the mother of the Messiah, and her sister Anna, and they marry into the royal household. Now, these are the lines that develop into the line of kings. So you see that the firstborn, Zerach, has the right of primogeniture, the scepter in his hand, the lawgiver between his feet. This is the right of primogeniture. Now, this line is barely there, but it is present in both William and Harry. And between the two of them, William has essentially already abdicated the throne. He's not going to take the throne. Which leaves Harry. Now, you can say you don't like Harry. He's got a bad reputation and all this. But let me tell you, he is his own man. You know, he served three tours in Afghanistan, walked to the North Pole, walked to the South Pole. You know, he's his own man. And he's not taking any lip from his dad. Told Queen Elizabeth to shove it. I don't want any part of this. He's a strong man. He's a strong man. And unlike Charles, who was only trained in the protocol of being the king, here's what clothing you wear. Here's how you stand up. This is where you give your little speech. This is where you put the little medallion on. That's all he knows. He doesn't know what it means to be a king.
No one liked Charles. No one liked Charles. In my British family, everyone thought he was weak and despised him.
Yeah, he's not the sharpest knife in the drawer by any means. And he's trying to keep Harry completely out of the picture. But that tells me that Harry is going to end up with the role. And this is what I want to say to Harry. Look, Harry, you have to come into the kingship as a judge, not as a tyrant, not as an executive, but as a judge who knows the common law and who says to those people in England, it either meets the protocol of the common law or it does not stand in Britain. And he needs to be the defender of the faith, not the defender of the Masonic, defiled Anglican church. But the true faith that had its origin in Joseph of Arimathea for 300 years before Rome came in and splattered it against the curb. And he needs to know what that faith is. And when he learns that faith and knows what the truth of it is and knows the common law and what the truth of that is and stands up as the last judge in the line, stands up as Moshe, right? You remember Moses in Exodus chapter 18, Jethro comes and says, Moses, you can't do this. You need to appoint judges under you. judges of thousands, judges of hundreds, judges of 50s, judges of tens. And then the very hard cases come to you as the last judge in line. And this is who the king needs to be. He needs to be the last judge in line. He needs to be the final authority, not as a tyrant, not as an executive, but as a judge. And you see, unless a civilization has a judge, it is not a civilization. It's not civilized. When your judges are taking bribes and they're bought off and they're corrupt and they're making decisions which are respective of your position rather than what the case is, you do not have judiciary. If you do not have judiciary, you do not have civilization. You don't have it.
Yeah.
And that's why you have to have a judge with integrity at the very top. So if the constitutional crisis, the constitutional monarchical crisis that's going on in Britain right now, it's a huge crisis. The monarchy could end. You know, Charles doesn't think this, but he can't think beyond his, the front of his nose. Yeah. The monarchy could end. It could come to a complete halt. And if that happens, there's not going to be a United Kingdom. There's going to be separate countries, and the EU is going to eat it alive. Mm-hmm. The Holy Roman Empire is going to win the battle. This cannot happen, in my view. It should not happen. And should we solve the constitutional monarchical crisis in Britain by addressing the fact that it is, in fact, a theocracy, and it is a specifically Anglican Protestant theocracy, mm-hmm, that has rejected any sovereign reign of Rome at all.
Yeah, at all times throughout the entire history of Britain.
And if that were to happen, now we can see some leadership across the English-speaking world. But because there has been no leadership for the last 75 years,
in the
English-speaking world, the English-speaking people have become the targets of the whole world. Let's kill them all. You think that isn't the discussion that's going on in the White House? Let's kill all these white folk. Let's kill all these Europeans. Let's kill all these English people, all these colonists that did all these horrible things to the world, like bring civilization, like bring culture, like bring economies of scale, like bring wealth. We got to kill those people. Why do we have to kill them? Because otherwise we can't steal their stuff. And a parasite never recognizes that it took somebody that knew what they were doing to build that wealth. You know, if you don't think that's the case, talk to Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe, who took the richest nation in the world and converted it to the poorest nation in Africa because he couldn't figure out that you have to know what you're doing to maintain wealth.
That is a good summary of the failure of the African state on so many different levels, of course. And I think it points to what you're describing in Britain. And quite honestly, I don't know if God's hand is on the resurrection of Britain. There has to be humility. There has to be a turning. There has to be a devotion to him, unless there's just a miraculous, by grace, pulling Britain out of the tomb like Lazarus. But I don't think so. I think God requires repentance and turning away. And if Britain doesn't do that, I think it's a Sodom and Gomorrah. The same for this country. You're either going to have a Sodom and Gomorrah future or a Nineveh future. Nineveh repentance. And I just don't see, every day that goes by, I don't see that repentance coming into the consciousness of the United States or Britain because of both the COVID-19, the turning over to madness and violence, and all of these symptoms, the invasion, the southern border, these endless wars, the genocide in Israel that they're doing, this madness against Russia. These are all, to me, signs of a mental, spiritual demoniac. We've turned into the demoniac, and there's no coming back. There's no healing of the demoniac, coming back into his right mind. That was for the Bible. The people are going to become more and more like demoniac. Now, the righteous, the Christian body of Christ, they're set aside. However, God protects them and delivers them, that's another thing. But I think the nation as a whole is gone demoniac, and there's no coming back. But Stephen, I'll hand it to you to give us your closing thoughts and wrap it up. Go ahead.
Well, my closing thoughts are this, Scott. We're at a point right now in the world we're on the cusp of the complete failure of the United States. And when I mean the complete failure, the dollar is going to go to zero. The markets are going to go to zero. The corporations are going to shut down. The whole thing is going to completely collapse. And I think we're going to follow the Weimar Republic in its collapse into a dictatorship. There'll be a dictatorship that emerges out of that collapse, probably being led by Barack Obama. And he's going to try to control the country with strong-arming elements of force. He's going to have a very difficult time because there's no real currency. And he can't adopt currency. They can create a central bank digital currency all they want. If it's not backed by gold, it will not be competitive in the world. It will be subject to the same inflation that the dollar had. It'll have some short burst of life and then will completely collapse. He has to be able to pay troops to be able to exact a dictatorship. And he's not going to be able to do that. And so in the failed state, you're going to see anarchy arise in many places, a dictatorship to try to combat that anarchy. And in the middle of that dictatorship, the idea under Barack Obama of asserting the supremacy of the minority races in the country on the basis of their race, as he already projected in Leave the World Behind, his movie, that's what he's going to do. He's going to try to project this racial superiority of the minority races in the U.S. and then give permission for them to do the exact same thing that's going on in South Africa, where they chant, kill the Boer, kill the farmer. And they're going to be trying to do the exact same thing here in America against those people who founded this country, those people who lived this country, who supported this country, who paid taxes to build this country, who built the infrastructure of this country. And they think they can do this, not understanding that they're all parasites in that whole thinking. To try to advance yourself on the basis of race is parasitic thought. And so this is going to result in, I think, a very violent confrontation throughout both throughout all of North America. It's going to be Mexico, United States, Canada, in absolute violence. Some of the most violent times ever seen. And this is going to go on for a long period of time. Assuming that there is no war against the U.S., and there probably will not be a war against the U.S., because again, why would Russia and China attack the United States when the U.S. government is killing it faster than they ever could?
That's right.
Not going to. So with that being said, this is why it's so critical to have this turn. And you got to remember that the United States is a secular state. It's not a theocracy. The colonies were all theocracies. They were overthrown by Jesuits and Masons who opened the door for Rome to come in and succeed against a Protestant enclave, because Rome has always been at war with Protestant England.
Yes.
And they won the war in the United States with the First Amendment. Now we have seven Catholics, seven Romans, sitting on the bench in the Supreme Court, four of whom were appointed by Trump.
And overthrew Trump, right? By denying the cases being heard regarding his election fraud allegations and such.
Yeah, well, the case when Texas sued Pennsylvania on a basis of original jurisdiction, and John Roberts went, nee, we're not doing it. Okay, so here you have it, and this is the difficulty. The U.S., which was founded by English colonists, who were Protestants, under a theocratic government in Britain, rejected that theocratic government in order to form a secular government to allow Rome to come in and gradually overthrow that Protestantism and create a Roman hierarchy until Rome completely controls the place, which it does now. And so as a consequence, this place is gone. It's not going to recover. But the people here, many of whom have the foundation out of the British Empire, out of the United Kingdom, out of the British Isles, out of Great Britain, may have a chance, but the only chance is if we see a theocracy rise again in its power and in its strength. And what I'm trying to tell you is the old MGB GT is sitting there designed as a theocracy of strength based upon the oldest form of the faith in the Messiah that was ever practiced. Look, the church in England started some 15 years before Paul began his evangelism, 300 years before Constantine created Catholicism. It's the oldest form of the faith in the world, and it is the foundation of the faith, and Britain is structured as a theocracy, and that theocracy needs to be defended by a man. Not by some wimp, not by some trainee, not by some brainwashed mama's boy, but by a man who's his own man and who understands the faith and understands the common law and stands again for its people. And that's us. That's you, Scott. That's me. And this has to happen. And should it happen, we can stop this ridiculous nonsense of having rogue members of MI6, you know, kissing the backside of the American military industrial complex. Get off of it. Yeah. Get off of it and get back to what you're supposed to do, which is building a real society based upon the common law. We're going to do it, Scott. We're going to do it. And what I say to you is have faith. This mission is underway. This is something that's going to take place because Esau will not prevail.
No. No, I think you're right about that. God is definitely going to bring the lice and the flies, the frogs and the pestilences. That's what this invasion is across the border. They are a pestilence. They are irritation. They are fleas. There are parasites and frogs. That's what all of these afflictions that we've been through under Biden, when the wicked rule, the people mourn.
Mm-hmm.
God has allowed a wicked ruler to, do I have your attention yet? Open up the borders. This is what he's doing. Oh, he's picked a war in Ukraine. Oh, now he's financing genocide of every Muslim in Israel and will embrace Israel's war against Iran. That's what you're on the trajectory with this wicked ruler in the hopes that there's repentance, that there's sackcloth and ashes, that the American people repent and turn from their wicked ways, and there will be revival. But I wonder how much time has got to pass, how much more suffering has to occur, before this sort of implosion begins to get people's attention and call them out, call them from the roof, call them out of the city, call them out of where they are into new dwellings, new mindsets. You must be born again. There has to be a great awakening for some, not all. Though there are some who want another COVID-19 booster. They want to turn in their relatives for saying something politically correct. They want to say, oh, tomorrow is going to be like today, and don't tell me it's not. I don't want to hear it. There are the simple demoniac fools who have their reward, and I'm not going to stop them. They're leaping to lemmings, to their hell and damnation. But there are those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life who haven't woke up yet. They are saved, but they're just not yet born again. That is yet to happen, and depending on when the close of the day is going to be. But I'll turn it back to you, Stephen. Give us a final close. How do you think in the next 6 months to a year this is going to begin to materialize? Or are we going to go through major catastrophes for the next year? You know, are we going to have a smoldering ring? Are we going to have Kamala Harris assassinated so they bring in Gavin Newsom and then they kill Joe Biden and then say, oh, it's been done by a white Trump MAGA conservative, Americans. So now we have to go and do all these things you're describing.
Yeah, I think that all the plans that they have, the plans of the wicked, are failed plans. They're not brilliant people. They don't see past their own nose. They're very reactionary, and their plans require them, like I said before, the dollar has to have some power. For them to have any power, the power is not expressed in the gun. The power is expressed in the strength of the dollar. And when the dollar goes to zero, there's no ammunition to put in the gun, and there's nobody to hold the gun because you can't pay him anymore. And so when the dollar goes to zero, all of their plans come to a complete stop, including all the deep state. They become failed. They're a total failed state. We're on the verge of that right now. Got an inflation rate that's running about 40% right now, which means the prime lending rate is going to clock up to probably 12, 15, 18, 20% before we get to the November election. All the banks are going to fail across the country. Gold is going to break out like you wouldn't believe. Silver is going to break out like you wouldn't believe. And people are going to be desperate for food because food is going to cost an absolute fortune. You're not going to be able to get it at any price. And so these are the circumstances that are coming to America. Now, the average person I think when you look at it, you say, why isn't the average person waking up? Because the average person needs a leader. The average person needs a leader. They need a leader in a leadership spot where a leader can make a difference. Trump is not that leader. Trump is a pontificator, and he's going to get in the slot of the presidency. He was so completely impotent as the president in his last 4 years. And he thinks that he's going to step in with all his rhetoric, and he's going to be more less impotent than what he was last time. He's already embraced abortion. He's already embraced the LGBT agenda, and so he's the master of the warp speed, Operation Warp Speed. These things are going to greatly harm him. He's not the leader that can do anything because the United States is not a leadership place anymore.
No, you're
It
right.
has been it's been completely eviscerated. So now it's going to take a leader, somebody who can stand in the free world and who doesn't stand for me or doesn't stand for you, but stands for the truth and stands for the faith. And if there is a leader that has the capability to stand for the truth and stand for the faith, then we can say a theocracy is born again. And the theocracy being born again is going to cause people to be born again. And people who go along to get along are going to have to go along in the faith and get along under the common law. That's what they're going to have to do. And it's an understanding that we can all embrace and we can set ourselves apart. We can come out of Babylon and begin to no longer share in her plagues. We can remove ourselves from the atheist Talmudic, six-colored flag that's dominating America. All that stuff goes away. It goes away. And Scott, as bad as the situation is going to be, there is a turn that's going to happen at the same time. And that turn is going to be a turn of righteousness in a vehicle of righteousness that is already standing. It just needs to have an oil change, a new battery put in, some new plugs put in it, and a tank of gas, and it fires up and goes.
Amen. Amen. Lord, let it be done. We pray for this country. We pray for the great awakening. You say, if my people who are called by my name shall turn and pray and turn from their wicked ways, I will hear from heaven and heal their land. We just ask for this. I can't remember how it all goes, but we will ask
That's
God.
close enough.
Stephen Pigeon, always a pleasure to have you on, and thank you so much for coming back safe and sound from Great Britain. Such a wonderful, insightful glimpse of what may be coming in the royal family and the settlement. And it would be interesting. And if you had a revival in Britain as the foundation of the faith, in this old way, it would catch fire in America too. America is not the as you said, this isn't a place of leadership anymore. And there needs to be something new. So we'll just have to see. But continue on and be salt and light. Let your light so shine before men that they see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. Stephen Pigeon, thank you so much for joining us. We will see you next week. God bless you, and thank you for joining us on Great Awakenings on globalfreedomtv.com. We encourage you to contact us on the website. If you have any comments or suggestions, or you'd like to get in touch with Stephen Pigeon, please email us there. We will see you next week. God bless you. Good night.